What's up to all the fans of America's Only Comedy Podcast Rebrand? Mort Burke here. I'm on tour right now doing stand-up. So if the audio quality sucks, my apologies. The actual podcast has great audio, though, so you don't have to worry about that. Come see me on tour if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma tomorrow, which as I record this will be the 24th. Come see me and my good friend George McAuliffe do a bunch of comedy at The Colony. It's an amazing club and we're so psyched to be there. Then we're in St. Louis on the 26th at Andy Slowey's The Improv Shop. Then we're in Chicago the 28th to 29th. We're going to be doing Lincoln Lodge. Then we're in Omaha on May 2nd at the Back Line, which is going to be great. And then we're in Salt Lake City at the Alliance Theater. It's a super fun tour. These places we're playing are all great. They're not like weird, crappy Chuckle Hut comedy clubs. We're really psyched to be doing them. So yeah, come see me if you live in America. Also, please go join our rebrand Patreon. It's a great way to support the show, and when you join the Patreon, you immediately get access to our Discord, which is a ton of fun. You can give suggestions for the show. We just recorded a new episode based on a suggestion from the Discord. You also get ad-free episodes. You get new unreleased content. You get video content. Ashley and I are doing a Q&A coming up soon that our Discord members will have access to. So yeah, go join the Patreon. It's a ton of fun over there. It's just Rebrand the Pod on Patreon. And find us on Instagram at Rebrand the Podcast. Thanks, you guys. We love you deeply. Bye.
Rebrand!
Ding!
Hello, beloved consumers. I'm Ashley Burke.
And I'm Mort Burke.
And welcome to Rebrand, a comedy podcast where we inject new life into tired old brands, whether they be snack foods, celebrities, or religious institutions. Huh.
That was a fun intro because it was sing-songy and we sounded bored.
Yeah, cause I'm in quite a mood.
Yeah, Ashley's got a case of the grumpus.
I got a big old case of the grumpus.
The grumpus monster's come to visit.
I don't want to live in a fascist country, honey.
No, I know it sucks.
Live in fascism.
It sucks. I don't want to be oppressed by an oligarchy. I don't want to have our cultural institutions dismantled by a man who inherited his money from apartheid.
I don't want it anymore. Okay, that helped.
Okay, good. You feeling a little better?
Yeah, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, I can't wait. We find that whining always helps a little
bit.
Yeah,
we like to whine.
Loud whining.
Loud, petulant whining, yeah.
On the flip side, really a man who's the opposite of a fascist, and that's how I always describe him to people, we have with us today host of the hit fashion podcast Blammo and an old friend of mine, Mr. Jeremy Kirkland.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, howdy, hey. Great to be here.
Sorry we started with so much whining.
No, I think whining is important. You gotta process that pain.
Yeah.
What's we gonna do?
I've found that the most effective way for me to do it is to act like I'm 5 years old.
I appreciate that. I think that's a smart way to do it.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to channel that. Because you're like, fuck, man, I'm powerless. What am I doing? I mean, It's rough out there.
It's rough out there.
You said this before we hit the red button. It's rough.
It's not fun. It's not a fun time.
Mm-mm.
No, and it's like every 3 hours is the most insane thing you've ever heard. That isn't even going to make sense a week from now because 30 more crazy things will have happened. We've forgotten that like Katy Perry went to space.
I
think that's the funniest thing that's ever happened, though. Yeah. I mean, because here's the thing. Don't you think that no matter how shitty the world is, the fact that we can kind of pause for a moment and be like, Katy Perry went to outer space, guys.
Do you think she sang one of her songs in space?
She did sing. She sang, I think, like, What a Wonderful World while they were orbiting up there. They really laid on the thick and heavy press. It was fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, and people are livid.
She also said that she might write a song from this experience. So get ready for that.
Oh, great.
Ruben, dial a friend. Let's see what happens.
I feel like it's going to be called Blue Dot and the course is going to be like blue dot, living on a blue dot. Yeah. There you go, Katie. You can take it.
I'm a longstanding Katy Perry fan because she retweeted me in 2000, probably 11.
Right? Okay.
That's going to go on your tombstone. It's going to be like Mort Burke, loving husband, faithful dog dad. Katy Perry retweeted him in 2011.
Yeah. What's funny is that I immediately got
3,000 new followers, but they're all children from the Philippines for some reason.
Oh, the bot army hit hard, huh?
Yeah, but it made it look like I had the creepiest follower. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
It was a pedophile's dream. But I. Do you want to know the tweet?
I would like to. I was about to ask. If you can pull it from the dome, I'm going to be shocked.
I memorized it. It's in my bones, but I have to kind of reach back into my subconscious to grab it now. It was, I got 99 problems plus two, and they're all Dalmatians. Cruella De Vil rapping.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So it's very G-rated, I think, really helped.
Yeah.
And obviously, it wasn't her running the account or whatever.
Unless it was, honey. You don't know. Katy Perry is a wild card.
I worked with a person once. They ran their own social, and no one believed that they did.
Really?
Yeah.
Insane.
I won't name it. No, because it was Twitter, and Twitter was like, no, but this is my fun thing. They were like, this is cool. I can do this on my own. By the way, it's Twitter till I die.
Yeah, of course.
Take
of
that, course. Elon.
How long ago was this? Because there's no way Twitter's their fun thing anymore.
Oh, yeah, right.
Twitter hasn't been fun for 7 years.
Yeah, I'm dating myself. This might have been the Mort Burke retweet era. Probably 2012, 2013.
Yeah,
it was when I had Squirtle as my avatar.
Oh, you're cool as fuck.
Thank you. It's a high praise coming from you. He's one of the original 150.
He's one of the OGs.
He's also one of the three that you get to choose in Red and Blue, which is the only Pokemon that matters. Come at me, Pokeworld.
There are too many now. My old woman yelling at the sky hot take is that there are too many Pokemon. We're not here to rebrand Pokemon, are we? We're here to rebrand.
I want to rebrand trying to be a cool dad. I'm trying to be a cool dad. And this is not the stereotype of cool dad, so you get to do whatever you want as long as you're in the house. It's more about myself. This is cool dad, maybe possibly existential crisis.
Modern cool dad, which to me means like loving, emotive, good tasted music, fashion, there for their kids, and willing to admit that they're having an existential crisis. I think the problem with the uncool dads is they're perpetually having an existential crisis, but they can't name it. They can't admit it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't sit in the chair alone. Sort of guy. This is like, hey, like I change your Mario Kart level to 100cc, and I'm helping you out here. You know, I might put you out to 150cc, but you're not on auto steer.
Yeah,
you're not ready.
Mm-mm.
You're trading music with your kids, so you're like, this is Built to Spill, and they're like, this is Charlie XCX.
Bingo. Yeah, my son, who is two, we listen to the Beatles station a lot in the car. They love the Beatles more than anything. And my son was like, Dad, is this a John song?
And
it was because it wasn't.
What song is it?
It was Obla Di Obla Da, which I'm like, hello, that's a Paul song.
That's the most obvious.
What are you, an idiot? You said to your kid?
No, it's a lot because, you know, when we're in the car, my wife will be talking about, the Beatles because we play the Beatles in the car, the Sirius station on there. And she'll be like, oh, wait, is this, sometimes they'll play stuff from the extended universe of the Fab Four.
Okay.
So you'll get some wings, you'll get all sorts of stuff. And he's heard my wife be like, wait, is this a Paul song? Is this a John song? It was him trying to like, yo, I'm involved in this thing. And so, he's asking who wrote it.
And it took me a very long time to be able to spot the difference between a Paul song and a...
Get out of here. No way.
You're saying we should give this young child a break for not being able to correctly identify what Beatle wrote what song. I don't think so.
Yeah, no.
Not in my America.
Right, you're like, is it surreal? Is it self-reflective? No, it's not fucking Paul.
Exactly. Yeah, Paul is the little whimsical one, and he's just like having the time of his life, and John's got the angst, man.
Yeah, dude. I was always a John guy, and the older I get, the more I like Paul. Or I like I revere Paul.
You know why?
Do you ever get to the Ringo part of your life, or is that right before death?
That's moments before you die.
Moments before you die, you become a Ringo person.
Yeah. I think the Ringo part has got to be when you don't know what language you're going to speak yet. Because I don't think any of the Ringo stuff makes sense.
Oh, you think it's pre-verbal?
When you're baby, pre-verbal baby time.
Yeah, I think that's probably some subtle shade at old Ringo.
I think it's some overt shade.
You can handle
it. Yeah, you're right.
You're saying Yellow Submarine?
Yeah, Yellow Submarine obviously is not the jam. I will say props to Ringo, though, for recognizing. He's like, hey, guys, in my deal, as long as I'm going to be in the Beatles, I need a song on every album. And they're like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever, why not?
Which is so brilliant.
It is genius.
It's, I mean, that's incredible.
Now I'm a big Ringo head. I've decided on this podcast.
Ringo's,
it's a great take. It's a good hill to die on.
And I like Yellow Submarine.
Yeah.
I like the kind of nonsense, so fucking British in 60s it hurts.
Yeah.
Psychedelia. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's an underrated drummer, right? Don't you think? Not yes. underrated. They say that like his ability to stay in the pocket is more important to the Beatles sound than people think.
You sound like me talking to my kids at the dinner table. I'm because I'll be like, you see, a lot of bands play with these things called click tracks. And the Beatles, they didn't have a click track. It was just energy, man. You know, and they're like, can I have more mac and cheese, please? I'm like, yeah, but hold on.
You have to earn it.
Yeah.
What was the name of the first Beatles album?
I know.
Wait, so your son is 2 years old and he said, is this a John song?
Yeah, absolutely. And he is not a savant. Trust me, that kid runs straight into the wall. But
and kids, he, I don't know anything about the development of children. Kids can talk it to like what they can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Bring, I mean, he's solid, a sentence little, together.
He can talk. He'll have a conversation with you. He just got pull ups and he calls them his Spidey diapes because
nice.
There's Spider-Man on him. And
hell
I'm
yeah.
like, you know, but love I'm that. I'm trying to find some way, especially now, because, you know, I go to therapy. I highly recommend everyone goes to therapy. My wife and I go to therapy together. And they're like, actually, that's a good way to do it. You're not overparenting. It's because it's all about trying to make kids feel safe in their feelings and emotions.
Right.
And my daughter, which is probably not cool of a parent thing for me to do, to out her, but it's fine. She's 7. She'll listen to this when she's 40, spending Musk bucks in space or whatever. But like a lot of younger kids, they have struggles with transitions, whether it's an ADHD or whether it, whatever it is, like they're figuring out how to go from school to home, go from
sure.
this situation to this situation. And it's
I
a lot
have
to
trouble
be,
with transitions.
Same. It's a lot to exist in this day and age. And so it's like all you want to do is find some way to validate your kid and let them feel safe. And so I'll you know, we'll be talking about that. The counselor will be like, that's very good that you're doing that. Yet you're not shaming them. There's no shame parenting. I think a lot of parenting, now I'm actually sounding serious. This is funny. But like, it's a whiplash of what you experienced as a kid. There's an excellent book called Jesus and John Wayne, which traces like how absurd far-right evangelical got. Like James Dobson, Dare to Discipline, all this really, really messed up stuff. And you see how all these other generations since responded as like this whiplash effect. And I think when you're trying to be a parent, you go like how you were raised and you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. Like right. this happened to me. There's no way I would do that. And, you know, that is obviously X to whichever type of person you are and what you've experienced, traumatic or otherwise. Yeah, me thinking about that stuff probably too much. You know, and I think that's probably like maybe the millennial thing. I'll be 40 this year. I'll be 40 soon.
Yeah.
Me and Robert Redford, same birthday.
Nice. Hell yeah.
I don't know. Do you all deal with this as, I mean, because one, you have a dog, which I will say already makes you a parent because you're dealing with a thing that can't really take care of itself. But
thank you for validating our parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just read into what you said that it's the exact same validity as you having your own children. It's the exact same thing.
I mean it. I'm dead serious.
No, it's
well,
definitely not.
I think Cody has ADHD. And again, I want to get him on human meds.
Yeah, yeah, we need to get Ritalin for him.
Referencing what we were talking about before briefly, the thing about shame and like hyper terrifying discipline is that it works. So
yeah,
that's it. If you don't care, if you don't have an understanding of a person's internal life, you'll be like, yeah, I just shamed him and they shut up. So I guess this is what we're going to do forever throughout time. It's only very recently we introduced therapy 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
To the culture. And so now we're getting a deeper understanding. So it's like, in some ways, doing something right is a lot more challenging. So it makes sense that the overthinking is a big aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have to balance it out with not projecting all your anxiety onto the kids, I imagine.
I guess there's a sort of varied brand that dads encompass. There's a lot of talk about dad coming home and the government. That's a thing that fucking conservative pundits say all the time.
Really?
Like dad coming home. Yeah.
I'm completely oblivious to this, but that makes perfect sense to me.
What does it mean, dad coming home?
Like that Trump is dad and dad's coming home to like discipline the kids kind of thing.
Oh, right. Totally.
Type of
yeah.
Is like shocking. A narrative. So I feel like the idea of the sort of like dom daddy has resurged in terms of like keeping the kids in line. And I guess the kids are citizens of a sovereign nation.
But yeah, it's fucking all daddy issues.
Yeah, it's all daddy issues.
It's frustrating because it's daddy issues. And it's the same thing that happens at fraternities where it's like, I got treated like shit, so I have to treat the new kids like shit. It's the exact same thing of like, my dad treated me like shit. I have two options, which is to assume that he's infallible and that I'm perfect. And then if I do that, then I have to treat my children like shit.
Uh-huh.
Or question whether or not some mistakes were made.
You're making the case for your podcast. I mean, this is why dads need a rebrand.
Right.
Because I think acknowledging that in many ways. I mean, I don't know if you even give a, a trigger warning. I mean, there's a lot of people, and I have many friends in my life, who the concept of, for a father is really messed up because it there's a lot of trauma, and whether it's emotional abuse, physical abuse, all sorts of stuff. And I think that's a certain word in many people's lives. I mean, shit, there's a reason why if you're signing up for whatever mailing list, they're like, hey, click this if you don't want to receive Mother's Day or Father's Day emails. I mean, it's hard. It's really, really, really hard. And my dad died almost a year ago. And I'm still processing the pain and awkwardness of having a dad and losing a dad. And also, what does it mean to try to be a dad and not have my dad to give me advice on how to do it? And it also makes me second guess and, look at everything that happened to me as like, oh my God, I think I was too hard on my dad.
Mm.
Like, I held him to this standard that I thought I was supposed to. And I think as you get older, and maybe that's like this level of true nirvana. And funny enough, Mort has actually helped me with this, whether he realizes it or not, from him being on my show and other stuff, is like, ultimately, when you're able to find some way to forgive someone for things that they've incurred on you, is like when you're able to heal. And now it's like, okay, I do want to, try to be this kind of parent to my child because my dad didn't do this.
Right. What is your dad ethos? Like when you think of like, I'm not going to do that. I don't know if you want to go that.
No, I don't. I'm as transparent. Yeah, whatever. My dad was in, he grew up in a super conservative household.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a band, honestly, like an incredible band called September. And they were trying to be this like, I'll be honest, like this kind of like Christian rock that wasn't like actually
corny.
Christian. Yeah. Like, and he basically this like secular would be the word. It's kind of pejorative now, but they were like a secular band that was like singing songs about, I mean, they were like an emo band basically in the 70s. In terms of like trying to process like life and pain and all these things, but trying to connect it to some level of spirituality. And then he realized that it wasn't really working. And I grew up as a, I never knew hunger, but we didn't have much.
Mm.
My parents did a brilliant job. I never knew I was like poor. But like that word can mean different across different things. Like, again, we never knew hunger, but like beans and cornbread was like pretty normal. I'm also a kid who thank God for free lunches at school and stuff like that. Serious. And I will fight for that as much in every way I can at all times. I mean, it's real and it's awesome to know that my mom could like breathe a bit. Because when we were in school, we had lunch for us.
Right.
But again, it was not like, oh, we're on the street, we can't do anything. But it's like, oof. Yeah, okay, you know what? Tonight, we are going to hit up McDonald's because they have 29-cent cheeseburgers on this, and we can get like four, and we're totally set for the night.
And how aware of that were you?
Not at all.
Okay.
Only as I got older. And I was like, oh, wait, you guys didn't do that when you were younger? And I had other friends. Yeah, I moved to New York when I was like 18, and I befriended people in different socioeconomic backgrounds, and a good amount were pretty affluent. And we would, as one does, you kind of trade stories of families and stuff. And I'm hearing about these things. I'm like, wow, wait, so you went on vacation every year?
right.
In other places? I'm like, we would.
That involved a plane somehow?
Yeah, things like that, which is, and I am not the kind of person who's,
You're not trying to win the poverty Olympics.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I also am incredibly, incredibly wealthy and blessed beyond my wildest dreams in ways of emotional support. And
no, but it's, like, yeah, that. It's okay to talk about the ways that the poverty really affects people. Here's the thing about forgiveness. It's important, but it's also important not to rush to forgiveness before you're ready, because there's a thing that you can do where you can abandon yourself if you still have unprocessed anger around stuff that deserves its anger. I don't have kids, so I haven't arrived at that thing of like, my parents, that's not totally true. In a lot of ways, I have a deep understanding about like why what happened there happened. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, I was born in 1979 in Missouri. There are so many socioeconomic, like educational, whatever, all the reasons for all this kind of stuff. And also it needs to get processed by the people who've experienced it, right?
Correct. And I'm also a person too, as you know, because we were talking about dads and stuff. I am not a person who will ever say, you can't really live life until you have kids, or you need to have kids. I think that's so fucked up, just to call that out. Mm-hmm. Anyone who tries to force that upon others is just like woefully out of touch with reality, because there's so many things that go on. So I don't think every person needs to be a parent. But I think as I became a parent, it's caused me, a side effect of it has caused me to take another look at the standard that I hold others to, specifically my parents. And I think it's okay now that I'm like, I'll say this. So I was with, my mom came to visit me in New York. I used to live there for a long time. And I felt high and mighty, because at the time I think I was like dating this woman who was, you know, showing me how to think better, because like, I don't know, she like likes Nietzsche or something, you know. And my mom visited me and I was talking to her and I felt like I was gonna let her have it. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna fucking really tell her all the stuff that she did wrong. You know, and I was like, did you know how bad I wanted to be a Boy Scout? And you told me we couldn't do it and we couldn't afford it. And so I found a Boy Scout pin. And I wore it, and then the kids at school busted me because they realized that I wasn't the right age to be a bobcat. And my mom was just like, and I was like, you know, and I wanted to do this. And I, you know, I was like, I never scored a point in anything. I always wanted to do sports, but all we had to do was go to church and da, da, da. And my, like, I am tearing into my mom. You know, I would never want to hear that conversation again, but I fucking let her have it. And she started crying. And it takes a lot to make my mom cry. And my mom was like, I wish, like, I'm so sorry. She was like, I'm just so sorry. But I was just trying my best. She was like, I love you. I was just trying my best. And it fucking hit me like a ton of bricks, because I realized, I was like, oh, my bad. You're a human. Like, you're a human, and you're going to deal with the same things that every human being deals with. Like a desire to be seen and heard and loved and appreciated and respected. And you're working with what's in front of you and what you have available to you. And here I am, and I'm going to just let my mom have it as this like crude form of justice. Mm-hmm. And it really messed with me. And now I wish I could go back. Like, if everyone's like, oh, if you had a time machine, what would you do? It's like, I would go back and remove that moment of me really hurting my mom. I came to this conclusion of like how human we are. And so it's like, okay, you know what? Like, I need to find some way. If my like sole purpose in life now is to find a way to just empower my kids enough that they're just going to feel like 5% better about their lives, then like, maybe that's it, you know? And if I'm going to do it by like showing them the Beatles and telling them that like vintage clothes are cool and, you know, purposely wearing my jeans and not wearing my, you know, whatever Under Armour thing that everyone is wearing at the pickup line, like then I will sail that wave. I don't know. Surf that wave. But I think like that's a thing that I think about a lot, and it's super important for me. And it's why like now, like just trying to be a parent is just trying to just be present.
It's funny, not to be devil's advocate, but I'm also like, all right. Also, like, if a parent's job is to be mature, then it seems to me that there could be some level of acceptance and maturity to say like, yeah, I did make these mistakes. Like, I was 23 when this happened. And when I'm Mort was 23, I was a psycho. Like, I'm only barely learning how to take care of myself. Do you know what I mean? So I think there is a responsibility to be had by the parents to say, like, in a loving way, not to shame themselves, because that's making about themselves, but to say, like, yeah, we didn't know. I mean, my mom said that to me. She was like, yeah, we didn't have a word for anxiety. We didn't have that word. You know what I mean? So there was truly just like a deep lack of understanding. Of course, everyone's always doing their best at all times, but a mature person will take responsibility for the mistakes that they made. It's deeply, deeply complex.
Yeah, I mean, and I think
for sure
the what helped was not me unloading on my mom, was not my mom saying I tried my best. It was the fact that we both had a desire for reconciliation and forgiveness towards
right.
each other.
That's right.
Where it was acceptance and, you know, I mean, and forgiveness, where she was like, you know, obviously that was really obnoxious and very cruel for me to say to her.
Yeah, but also, dude, you were probably like 19. Do you know what I mean? And look, like, I think talking about therapy, like, these feelings have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So they need to be expressed. And like, is it always the best to take that unfiltered rage to the person who caused it, especially if they're like your parental caregiver? Not the best move, but what happens a lot of times is people just eat all those feelings and project it on, either deny that they exist or project it onto somebody else.
Oh yeah, I mean, I wasn't having this 5-star life in New York at the time. I mean, shoot, trust me, I'm not going to win any awards for, you know, hedonistic Jeremy trying to be a rock star. Around.
Yeah, but again, like you're a young person.
Yeah,
you know, like 19-year-olds are allowed to make mistakes. Everyone is. Do you know what I mean? So it's to me, I think it's cool that you were able to have that conversation. And I think that's, I like it when I see kids like sort of make fun of their parents a little bit, because I'm like, oh, that means they're not scared of their parents. You know, like I think like Cody will like, Cody acts like we're his annoying teenagers. Do you know
Cody
what I mean?
Is the dog, by the way, for listeners.
Cody is our dog.
Cody is our dog. Yeah. So we like don't do what he wants enough. And he like rolls his eyes at us and like loudly exhales and stuff. And I think that's great, because if we were like disciplining him through violence, he would be cowering at all times. But instead, he looks bored with us and a little frustrated. And I think that's like the perfect expression for a young person to have towards the caregiver.
A young dog.
Yep. And it's the young dog. And it's the dog parent or the human parent's ability to let, or it's their responsibility to say like, okay, great, that means I'm doing a good job. My job is not to be loved by my kids necessarily.
Yeah.
That's for me. That would be for me. If my kids need to love me, that's for me. But if my job is to empower my children, then that's for them, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's because it's hard to do, right? I mean, like, and again, I'm no expert. Like, my kids are 7 and 2.
You so are I a sex even hit. Though, so I think that's cool.
I haven't even hit them rebelling or, you know, right now they think
I thought you were saying I don't even hit them, like you don't even abuse them. And I was like, well, I should hope not, Jeremy. My goodness. No.
I almost never hit them.
No, I mean, but
pulling
that's
their mouthing off.
Yeah, yeah. It's been that's 2 months.
A couple slappies here and there. It's okay.
Since I headbutted my children.
But no,
it would be funny to be a dad who's like, I only headbutted them. Yeah. He's like, I never spanked them.
Right. I put my body at a 90-degree angle and I pawed the ground with one of my legs and then I launched myself at the child and I headbutted them into the wall. That's it.
If they're not eating their Brussels sprouts, they're going to get a headbutt from dad.
It's true.
You're going to get a UFC style dad butt.
So your rebrand of dads is that you can't abuse them, but only if it's kind of silly.
If you have kind of a one goofy move that you do.
I do think that it's okay to make fun of your kids in private if they don't hear. And that is, someone might message me and be like, that's really inappropriate. I'm like, no, because that's venting. And it's like, you know, my partner and I will be chatting and she'll be like, man, can you believe that, you know, he or she did this or they, man, what a bonehead move. And
well, you're just watching somebody learn how to live. So
exactly. And it's funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah. They thought
they're bad at stuff. They're right. So bad at stuff.
Yeah. They thought you didn't have to chew all those Cheerios they fucking swallowed. Like,
yeah.
What a goof. That whole thing's got to be so silly. Just like, because we're watching footage of panda bears recently, because we're the most wholesome household in America. And they're like clumsy teddy bears. They just like fall over backwards very, very, very slowly. And then at the last second, panic, you know? Which is like, that's how kids are all the time. It's like living with masters of slapstick or something. It's like little Buster Keatons.
My daughter's already trying to be a contrarian, which I'm like.
Is she seven?
Yeah, she's seven. She is has a very privileged life in the sense that because of my career, I get a lot of like clothes and stuff sent to me. And this very, very high-end Italian brand sent their kids line to Harriet.
I'm imagining she's wearing like a leather evening gown to preschool. That's what, that's what I'm imagining.
She got a cashmere peacoat.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's a banging peacoat.
What color?
Oh, navy, of course, ride or die.
Navy, sure. Wow. I didn't even know they made, I thought it was wool only. Whoa.
So, she got kitted out, and it is, you know, I was like, I wonder what this costs. And I went and I looked it up, and I was like, holy shit, $3,500. And
whoa,
like,
kid you size? Know, and it was, oh, that's so kid funny, size. Dude.
You and I gave it to her, and I was like, Harriet, what do you think of this? And she's like, I mean, I don't know. It's not very cool, Dad. And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
But dude, and I'm like, you know how cool this is?
But dude, you know you can't afford, you know that though. Anything that you say is cool ultimately is going to become uncool. That's the like danger of being the cool dad is you might expose them to so much cool stuff.
But what if my kid becomes, and this is a fear I have. This is a very real fear. What if my kid, because I'm cool and trust me, I got my shit together, is they rebel and become
basic
a loser.
Yeah.
They become a total nerd loser. Which I don't want some cashmere peacoat.
Well, what's going to happen probably is they're going to be into like Hardee's. They just will probably put very little thought or discrimination into their taste, which is really easy to do and actually might be an easier life in a lot of ways.
It might be. But I will say, if you want to prevent them from, this is what I would say. You should pivot and only give them big dog shirts to wear. Big dogs, Crocs, and basketball shorts, and be like, these are the coolest. This is fashion, the height of fashion. And then she will be begging you for the cashmere peacoat.
That's true.
Isn't that like Silver Lake Bieber style or something, though? I mean, because you're pretty dead on.
Really, really hip hop and cool just now.
That is pretty cool, actually. Big dog shirts are dope, and Crocs are kind of fire.
Oh,
and
no.
Basketball shorts, well, Adam Sandler,
I'm
man.
I'm too effortlessly cool. That's
you
problem.
Are.
Well, that's sort of this beautiful. Yeah, Ashley's a fashion icon, whether she acknowledges it or not. I'm always
damn right.
I'm wearing cloud pajama pants right now.
And is there anything cooler?
Let it rip.
Yeah, the fucking the pajama bottom thing was huge, like probably 3 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. I'm out of the zeitgeist. I know you say I'm a fashion icon, honey, but
yeah, the thrift store chic of like the basketball shorts with the big dog shirt.
Maybe the secret is that nothing's out of fashion.
That's not the much bigger. Business. No, that to be honest, that's the bigger sort of story in fashion now is that it's confidence, right? It's not what you wear, it's how you wear it. And like, as trite as that term is, it's very, very true. If you look cool and you're wearing something a certain way, I mean, it is a bit of the emperor has no clothes. Like, you're just like, man, fuck it. No way. I'm wearing this and I am going to embrace this so hard that people are like, you know what? That person's really got something going on there.
For sure.
It's just confidence.
and especially if it's comfortable, right? So back to pants. I always want to bring it back to pants if possible. Yeah, that like they you know, in skateboarding, maybe like probably 4 years ago, Polar Big Boys were the move, which is a very specific kind of pants where like they're not quite as good as the mid-90s Kenan Milton baggy pants, but they're a mix between those and like the JNCO stovepipe pants. And now the last like 2 years, those have sort of trickled out, but that's what kind of everybody is wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think like tight jeans on men are going to be coming back soon, but I like the fact that for a long time, it's been whatever is comfortable is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 90s, it was this thing where like all the skateboarders were dressing like orphans because that's how they felt. And now the younger generations have so little faith in their future that they feel like orphans. So they're like, why would I wear anything but a fucking soft, oversized Looney Tunes sweatshirt and some pajama bottoms?
Right.
Why wouldn't I be comfortable? Everything's on fire.
Yes, which I relate to.
Yep.
So my niece and nephew
And also they're young, so they look good. That's what's interesting too, is like the older you get, like you think old people, sometimes you're like, that's an old person's outfit, but really it's just an old person wearing it. And a young person wearing it would just
look cool.
Incredibly cool.
Yeah. So my niece and nephew, I see them for holidays and whatever stuff. And I was like, hey, you know, you guys are in high school. There's like a senior in high school and junior or whatever. I'm like, what are you guys, what are y'all wearing? And they're like, like pajama bottoms every day and like Birkenstocks, maybe a hoodie. And I'm like, is that what's cool to wear? They're like, oh yeah, 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 definitely. Like an oversized hoodie, vintage or thrifted or, you know, and then one of them will be like, well, occasionally there's like Sheen hauls. And I immediately was like, hey, I just want you to know, Sheen is the most fucked up company ever. And that's like totally.
Wait, what? I don't know that company.
Sheen, S-S-H-E-I-N. Sheen and Temu are these two Chinese companies that they're all like, shop like a billionaire, whatever. The whole point of Sheen was to get you to purchase X amount to get like your free shipping, but it's clothes. And so there would be people online on TikTok, these like younger kids, honestly, that would post their Sheen hauls. And it would be, you know, like this awesome spaghetti strap, you know, spandex shirt thing and this sort of thing that looks like Skims and this hoodie and then this. And like each thing was like $2, $3, you know, $1.50. And they hit that $25. And they're like, I got my whole wardrobe for like $25. And it's like Uyghur cotton, slave labor, like nothing good whatsoever. And they were like, oh yeah, well, occasionally there's like Sheen hauls. And I'm like, excuse me, let your old Uncle Jeremy tell you how effed up this is and human capital and stuff. But they were just like, oh, okay. And I was like, I'm just curious. I was like, what do you guys think of the stuff I wear? And they're like, oh, Uncle Jeremy, you always wear some cool, like old people stuff. And I was like, I was like, wait, do you know you can only get this in Japan? And there's them. Do you know this is indigo dip dyed? Okay. And I'm like, do you know that John Mayer liked the picture, the fit pic of me wearing this? You know, which like, is not John true. Mayer? Yeah, probably. But they're just going to be fine because they're like, whatever, we're just comfy.
A lot of desire to look good comes from insecurity. And then it's like they've lapped that insecurity to now they're like so insecure that they're beyond superficial insecurity. Mm. So they're like, yeah, it's cool to look sad.
Right.
And honestly, it kind of always has been.
Well, but they're living in an insecure time.
Yeah.
In an insecure country. Yep. So they're like, as you're saying, might as well be comfy.
Totally.
You two are both celebs. Do you ever think about what you're wearing when you leave, like, hey, you're gonna go to Maru or whatever, and you're like, do I need to get a fit off before I go?
I think it depends on what neighborhood I'm going to. If I'm in our neighborhood and I'm just going to the grocery store or whatever, I don't give a fuck. I'll just wear. Although apparently I'm dressing like the kids because I'm going out in pajama pants and a hoodie and wearing Birkenstocks. So
there you go.
I guess I am a fashion icon after all.
Yeah, in my opinion, you popularized a whole series of haircuts.
I agree. Okay.
Yeah, right.
There's some fan pages. Yep. Yeah,
you better believe it. And I started two of them. Since we've been married, I've been doing fan pages of Ashley.
Yeah, that's his main thing.
But I'm the same level of aware of my outfits that I always have been. I'm learning my color story.
You are.
Learning my color story. That's been important.
Did you get your colors done?
No, I didn't get them done.
He's tracking when people compliment his outfits and the colors that he's wearing.
Yeah. Okay. And especially as a fair gentleman, I can do a lot of damage to a look if I'm wearing too much red. It makes me like a pink baby. But a green and a blue will really make these
eyes. Maybe the old peepers pop.
Yeah, these eyes, which are the blue of a moonlit
Unpack
ocean,
that for me.
Really
what,
come
what,
to life.
What green and blue?
What green?
Yeah, I mean, there's a wide variety of green.
Yeah.
This green you're wearing right now. It's
I have corduroy. I have green corduroy pants, which is
olive
like,
green.
Sure. A forest. But any blue really works for me.
Yeah. Blue's a good color.
Green, blue, whatever. Navy, all of them.
Guys, look, not to be the podcast dictator, but we've gone off from dads. Are we rebranding dads? Or are we rebranding fashion? Or are we rebranding dad fashion? Where are we at?
I think it's all inclusive. I would be shocked by an order of magnitude if you get some feedback that were like, man, they were really onto this and they left because it's all a part of it. You got to look like a dad. You got to live like a dad and you got to love like a dad.
I'm going to rescind my previous statement then that it should be about dads in general. So cool dads. Okay.
You're damn right. And that's what I'm trying to be. I'm
so trying to
be
a cool dad. Although what we're discovering is that if you are actually cool, your kids will rebel. So I'm wondering how
that is the
you
fear
go
of
all
being,
the way
that
around.
Is the fear of the cool dad.
Right. So you have to find a way to maintain your coolness, even though inevitably your children will want to rebel in the end.
Absolutely.
Fashion.
And here's what I'll say about this. True cool is being secure in yourself, right?
Sure.
So if you're secure in yourself as a dad, you actually automatically are a cool dad. Also cool, I think, also means intelligent and aware and open and curious, right? If you're all of those things truly and secure, what you're doing is allowing your children to be who they are, which is allows them to be ultimately cool.
I hope. Because the world's going to judge whether or not they're cool. They might feel cool the same way I feel cool, but I'm getting clowned on even though I'm wearing some cool indigo dip dyed, you know, hand woven fabric.
And that's why it comes down to you. Do you like it enough that even if nobody in the world thought it was cool,
right,
would you be enjoying
it? Right. Is how do you define cool if not by the approval of the masses? Is cool an inside job?
Yep, totally.
Ooh. That's the million-dollar question.
There's been a couple of people in skateboarding who've gone through overall phases.
I love an overall myself.
Yep.
Worn them since I was in elementary school.
Just
been waiting for them to come back around.
Totally.
You rock a good... Okay, question. Yes. Sorry to interrupt. When you wear your overalls, are you bibbing? Or are you got both of them on?
You do.
I got both of them on.
Yeah. It was kind of
not that cool. I'm not... But I feel like that's not the cool move. I feel like doing one on is the cool move, right? And
head explosion.
That's what I did when I was 10 years old.
When I think one off, I think TLC, 90s hip hop R&B.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the bibs. Love of the bib.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But the overall is a bigger move for a guy than a girl. There's something like a women are a little bit, because with a dude, you're saying like, either I'm a carpenter, I'm like a blue collar, whatever, or this is exclusively a fashion move, really.
Right.
And that's harder for a dude to pull off, you know? But so to me, pulling off a pair of overalls is kind of the ultimate cool, I think. If you can do it and make it work and you're a dude, I'm like, damn, this guy believes in his heart that he has an inner strength.
Okay, Jeremy, what does it mean to you to be a cool dad? If you were to summarize it?
That's a great question. It's probably the whole reason why I'm here. You can tell I'm stalling. honestly, I think to be a cool dad is... I'll say this in the best way. I don't want to lose my identity because I'm a dad, the identity I've spent my whole life trying to build.
Sure.
And I also feel the weight of trying to help my children build their own identities through empowering them, through encouraging them, even when it's things I could give a shit about.
Yes.
Right.
So specifically, like, my daughter loves to draw. Loves to draw. She's an incredibly talented, you know, illustrator. And I don't just say that. It's like, it's not two squiggles. I mean, she draws emotions. She knows how to draw eyes and faces and correct features and all these things. And I don't care. And I don't like them. And I have stacks of paper all over my desk of things that she's drawn me. And I don't care about them at all. But I love her so much that I'm like, I feel like I need to care. And it's a thing, look, and a lot of these things are gonna be contradictory because like parenthood is in general, but like, okay, because I love her so much, I love the drawings. Mm. But if she was not attached to the drawings, I'd be like, he's a fucking piece of shit. Get this out of here. Let me throw it away.
It's a transitive property of love.
The longest distance you'll travel, Jeremy, is from your head to your heart.
Mort made really extended direct eye contact with me when he said
quote.
That.
Whole quote, episode summary.
I think parents' whole job is to do what you're talking about. It's not like a parent goes to a baseball game because they're like, I can't wait to watch nine-year-olds toddle around in dirt for 3 hours. And
yeah, right.
Cry.
And then also,
you know,
during that time, I'm like, how do I literally make, in some cases, not all the time, but I'll get paid to like go to events and like be this court jester for rich people and stuff sometimes. And it's like, I'm like, am I going to lose that? How low does my stock price go with the two kids in tow? Like, that's, I didn't even intend for that to rhyme, but like that, like, what happens there? And I think like that's the thing where it's like the cool dad. Yeah, earlier when I was saying it's like almost this existential crisis, it's very real where I'm like, what kind of car can I drive? I'm serious. I'm not going to drive like a BMW. Like, look, props to anyone who has an X5. It is a car I would love to own. But like, I can't do that because of our neighborhood. Also, my wife's like, no, you're not doing that. And I can't really afford it. So I'm like, I can't get a Highlander because that's what every other person in the pickup line has.
Right.
Interesting. You know? Yeah.
So I got, I really thought I was being cool and I bought a Kia Telluride. And it's like every other person in the pickup line has that car.
Uh-huh.
Like I am trying to build my identity. So I was like, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put a little steal your face, Grateful Dead Steely thing on the back. Uh-huh. So now, and it's a very, very well placed, like metal applique that's on there. So it looks like it came from the factory, you know?
Uh-huh. Like it came with the car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's not a bumper sticker. Right. Like, let me be honest. Like I'm a cool dad. So I don't have a bumper sticker, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's very well placed. I placed it in the lower right hand corner next to the little 4X thing showing that my car has four wheel drive. So it's like 4X Grateful Dead Steal Your Face.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you described me as a celebrity earlier and I think that's absolutely accurate. And as a celebrity, I will say that I think you're cool no matter what. And I think that the thing about loving children is that it's a kind of, it doesn't dissipate. Whereas like cool is temporary, but the love that you give your children will reverberate through the ages.
You're saying the coolest thing you can do is to love your kid.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But also, if I'm going to turn into a fucking loser doing it, I got to figure this out.
He's going to have to headbutt his kids into the sun. I think, unfortunately, that is the fate of any parent. You will be cool in certain contexts, but there is no, unless you're privileged enough to get old enough that your kids get to see you in a new light, maybe because they have kids, like what happened with you and your parents. But I think you might be in for the long haul of being a loser for at least to your kids for a little while.
And that's why I am also, this is my 4D chess move. I'm befriending the people that they think are the coolest people ever. So one of
those people as well.
Yeah. So one of those, and I'll say this, and you can leave this in. So Mac Barnett and John Clausen are, John lives, I think he lives kind of near you guys. Incredible illustrator, super cool dude, amazing parent, has done a lot of kids books, young adult books. I mean, there's a book called like I Want My Hat Back. These are serious, like mind-bending books that you read them and they're like, you know, five or six different pages about like the life of like these shapes or a car, and you read it hits you so hard because you understand the things behind the things. And Mac Barnett, he lives in Oakland. Incredible, incredible children's writer. And my kids think they are the coolest fucking people that have ever walked this earth. Now, I will say they kind of are, but they don't realize that, you know? And so at one point, I was talking to Mac on FaceTime and I was like, oh God, I know that Harriet wants to talk to Mac. And I was like, I don't want to put him on the spot. Oh, I don't want to put him on the spot. And I was like, hey, Mac, would you mind talking to Harriet? He's like, yeah, sure. You know, and she's like she is just freaking out talking to the author of First Cat in Space series and losing her mind. And I realized that me doing that gave me all this cool points to be the cool dad for my kid a little bit longer, because now it's not just like, you know, dad is bald and, you know, has indigo shirts. It's like, dad knows the person who made my favorite book ever.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect move because you're facilitating their joy. You could be Miles Davis, who is like, you know, undeniably cool and also like crashing Ferraris and like keeping women captive. You know what I mean? Like, right? And it's like,
sure.
Those kids were probably like, yeah, my dad was cool, but also like I can never have a successful relationship.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's a really smart move. Part of it is like giving them what they want through a way in which they have to acknowledge that you did it for them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Mac and John, if you're listening, I'm friends with you guys because you're cool to me, not just to my kids, but it's a nice bonus that my kids are the coolest fucking people ever. I think that's the hardest part. Cause like my dad had some cool friends that only now do I, you know, my dad was super good friends with Dan Peek from America. You know, like man around the desert with a horse with no name.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm like, whatever, where's his Lincoln Logs? You know?
Right.
Totally. He just got Lincoln Logs.
My dad had a fucking amazing record collection that I didn't care about until I was 25 or something. And that's cool. So it should
that's be. The thing. You guys, you have to build, I feel like you have to build the house you're not going to live in for a long time. You have to set the bricks, you know, so that one day, one glorious day, they approach you out of nowhere and tell you that you're cool. But I think you have to, you know. Like, don't go for the bassist. You know what I mean? You either have to go for the lead singer or not at all. Like, we got to, you know, you got to shoot your shots carefully.
You're right. You're right. You know.
And the cool has to be cool for you. Like, that's the thing. It can't be dependent on other people's opinions. That's like a lifetime's work. Finding out what you... I definitely had an existential crisis at some point where I was, like, probably 25. And, like, do I really like Velvet Underground, or am I just listening to this because they're the coolest band in the world?
Right.
And everybody else knows that they're cool.
Wait, can you please share the answer?
Yeah, they're great.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah. All right, thank you.
But also, the older you get, you're like, yeah, that ballad about heroin, there's some of those lyrics are kind of corny. And the more you learn about Lou Reed, the more you learn like, oh yeah, he was like, again, I did not come on here intending to diss Miles Davis and Lou Reed, but he was like deeply troubled. Sorry, saying that's where it's like Paul, John would say to Paul, he called his songs grandma music, which is fucking a hilarious slam.
Yeah.
But also, you know,
Paul's kind of a sweetie.
Yeah. He was making beautiful melodies for from babies to, you know, retirees.
Yeah, right? It's true.
Because he had less trauma probably. And so he had more love available to him. And the thing about people who are traumatized is we're real cynical around people that experience love for a long time. But the reality is like, we're jealous of that, you know?
So you're saying that cool people are deeply unhappy.
There's a kind of cool that a young, usually man, will respect that is a deeply
hidden
unhappy
pain.
Person.
Hidden
yeah,
pain.
And sometimes beautiful art comes from that. But I think we're entering a new world that requires a kind of art that points towards lightness as opposed to dark.
Ooh.
You know what I mean? We've got enough darkness. It's fucking everywhere. The artists need to teach people how to love and laugh.
I know I'm the guest on the pod, but can I ask both of you this question?
Hmm.
Because I admire your work greatly. Do you feel that you have to alter your content and your work that you do for other people because of how crazy the world is at the moment?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. That's I am trying to make beauty and be funny around it with my stand-up. I am trying to speak to deep truths about love and the meaning of why we're here and the point of existing, and utilize the funniest shit possible, like the sugar around the medicine.
Well said, Ashley.
I always have wanted to put... I've always valued the idea of making something also being healing. Sometimes to my own detriment, but making sure that what I'm creating is saying something or progressing towards some end that I think is a value. So I've always sort of thought about my work that way. It does feel that now more than ever, I don't know what the point would be of making something cynical or something that you, like you're saying, that just is adding to further darkness. Yeah, I mean, I'm working on a project right now that I haven't I've had in my head for like 10 years, which is basically like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but for adults. So it's like a mental health show, but it, you know, is like adult humor, it has puppets, etc. And it's taken me a really, really long time to be able to get the courage up to like make it. But I am happy that I'm releasing it now because it makes me feel like I'm doing something that's, you know, worthwhile in a really difficult time.
I mean, my take as just a fan of both of you is just you guys continuing to do what you do is the most exciting thing for me. Like, just like, oh, thank God, because right now my life feels so shitty that I just need to watch or, and it, this is not to tune out. This is not to like disconnect from reality, but
Right.
it's just like laugh and feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And I think Ashley's always worked from her heart. And I think that's why she's so beloved. And I think that takes an incredible amount of like strength. And what we're talking about, not falling over too far to, will people think this is cool? Like, because the thing she's working on right now is so fucking funny and so pointed and so beautiful and has so much like meaning around it. And she is hilarious. So it is that, you know? So
But
I think
wait.
a. I think a lot of it really is sort of trusting that. And that's why I think the stuff that Ashley does is like new, because I think that's a new way to be and facilitate art. And I think it's interesting your interview with Tim Heidecker, which was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I think for a long time we have received beautiful art from extremely troubled people. And I think in America, it's really hard to ha sustain a career of any kind and develop your spirit and your sense of wholeness as a human being because there's no fucking time because everything's so competitive. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? So I'm sort of obsessed with people who have been gotten really big and haven't self-destructed or seem to have a level of groundedness or a spiritual life that allows them to enjoy their life as it is.
It's like I think anyone that I've met that's really happy in their life
Yeah.
is a person who's okay with the dynamics of their of like the way that the trajectory of their life, you know? I mean, there's some people where it's like, okay, I have this person and they're super happy because right now everyone's watching their show or everyone's listening to their album
Right,
or
right.
everyone thinks they're the best fashion designer, whatever that is, right?
Right.
But the ones that, I mean, obviously that's fleeting because you're putting all of your joy and happiness into this one specific thing.
Yeah.
The people whom I think are the most like secure and happy are the ones who are like, yeah, you know what? That's fine, but there's a new magazine cover every month. Like it's that's not what's going to satisfy me. It's the fact that I can continue to make art, that I can continue to do this, I can continue to be involved and be, you know, in people's lives, whether or not I'm, you know, in this best list,
Yeah,
minor
right.
album,
Because
fashion, whatever. Yeah.
that stuff is unsustainable. Like
Of course.
eventually, because we're so in denial of like death as a culture, like
Yeah.
we like to pretend that that stuff is permanent and it's not going to steadily fade away no matter who you are. And even if it doesn't actually, which happens sometimes weirdly, those people are so fucked up because
Yeah.
you it's you know, you need to sort of, I think as a human being, like it's so hard and also very necessary to wrestle with your own fallibility and your own perceived failures, because I think a lot of this desire to succeed is based on a lack of worth. Like just a wholesale lack of, like, we are not valuable if we are not successful in some realm. I feel that with myself a lot. And especially being in Hollywood, like, dude. You know, you move, like jealousy becomes this like monster that you have for me that I had to fucking deal with, because it's like I'm sweeping up at a restaurant on the sidewalk at 8:30 in the morning while somebody I used to do shows with, their face is on a bus that drives by me,
Oof.
you know, and
Yeah.
like, you know, or like in 2013 I was making a lot of TV money. And
Sure.
then for the last bunch of years, I've been doing like open mics, you know? And that kind of shit will like, and could have killed me. Like, not that that's the, it's not that it's any harder than digging a ditch or whatever, but it's like that ego level of ego shifting, I never would have been able to deal with it if it wasn't for developing like a spiritual life.
I mean, I think that's, yeah, that's in it of its core. And I think, I mean, to be honest, the summary of all these things, I mean, you know, hopefully the cool dad, whatever, doesn't really eradicate the whole train of the show, but like just the sense that finding a way to be content despite everything else that's happening around you,
yeah,
you know, to where, I mean, shit, I wrestle with that all the time. I remember I had like different levels of success happen, even just like from the show early on, where I'm like, oh wow, I'm like right. The only whatever, I'm the only this, or I hit this level of downloads, or I hit this level of whatever. And then you're like, oh my God, like the hockey stick growth is gone, or this is gone, or this, you know, or that I didn't get a response to that email as fast as you want, or you know, whatever that is. And you're just like, what the fuck? You're like, am I not worth anything? You know, I'm like, did this not work? Did this not click? And then it's like, oh, well, if you put all your values and all these things in that world, that vertical, whether it's your, you know, which, cause I mean, yeah, I was joking earlier about like my stock price where it's like, okay, yeah, I left New York City. I have two kids now. Am I as cool or as relevant as when I still live there and when I didn't have kids and when I could go out to that party or right. I could respond to that thing.
Right.
And you're like, I don't know. And so it's like, well, shit. The problem was not whether or not you got invited. The problem was that I based my worth on whether or not I got invited.
Right. And like, and this stuff, it can seem a little bit like, certainly, especially when you're talking about like Hollywood shit or whatever, like navel gazy and self-absorbed, which it totally is. And also I do think it speaks to a deeper human pain that isn't addressed as much as it should be. You know what I mean? Of like, yeah, we don't have any cultural sense of true lasting meaning, you know? So how do we develop that for ourselves and each other, you know? And for me, I fucking take direction from people and I meditate, you know, and I listen to various spiritual frameworks and I pull what I can use from it and apply it to my life. And like, it's slow and steady growth and it's going to be a lifetime's work, but it's made me a much happier person than I would be otherwise. When for a long time I wanted to be a great miserable artist, you know, and more, it's like the same way when you're 23, if you're me, you kind of want to die of alcoholism.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you get a look at what that really is.
You wanted to be like the piss drunks era. Was that your thing?
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh. Or fucking Elliot Smith or whoever, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, that shit is actually really painful. And it's like, it's not cute anymore when you're 36. It's not cute anymore when you're in your 40s, you know? So there's a natural thing that happens with aging if you're doing it properly and in a healthy manner where you can like become a real, you can hold really beautiful space for people. And that's the shit that actually reverberates through people's lives and actually makes you remembered in a like with a fondness as opposed to like a tinge of jealousy, which is what we all feel about great artists, which is why America loves to fucking rip people apart. Even the Katy Perry thing, like, yeah. She's just a lady who like tried to, who was like singing. And now, yeah, she like got bought by Jeff Bezos for a second to shoot into the stars for no fucking reason and got put in like a sexy spacesuit. But we're also frustrated at the destruction of what we believe to be permanent that we're experiencing, that it's real easy to project all of our rage onto her when we forget that that she's a fucking human being, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why like all the Miles Davis shit and all that stuff is so fascinating, because you look at these people who are such profound talents and then they just get sort of like shredded in a way through this like getting put through this ringer of like ego inflation and mental illness and substance abuse and inability to find a lasting sense of peace and love. You know, which Ringo is all about. Ringo loves that peace and love, baby.
He does love peace and love. You know, I bet he's gotten quite a bit of peace and love. God, you know, I think money helps a lot with getting at peace and love, but
it can. You
know, it can, but it's also.
I also know very rich people who are fucking miserable. You can be, you know what I mean? And that's not to say money doesn't help. It definitely helps.
Sure.
It for sure helps.
But I think that's, you know, I think that's the thing too, where, you know, when you were talking about And this is the ultimate thing I'm trying to strive for, is to just like, look, if I can just love my family and love them enough that like at the end of the day, they're going to be like, well, yeah, but he loved me. You know, he did care about me. You know, like that is ultimately where I have arrived at now with my family, where it's like, yeah, of course my parents weren't perfect. Of course my siblings weren't perfect. Of course I'm not perfect, but we do love each other. And like, what a joy it is to have the opportunity to love someone and to be loved by them. And like, yes, that sounds so tacky, but it's only tacky because it is the thing that we all continue to strive for, yet we probably have the most difficult thing accomplishing in our lives. You know, it's just like, it's why we still need entertainment and stuff more than ever, because you're just like, I need a thing to pour my affection into, because I'm just this vessel that is accumulating so much, but I have to funnel this admiration, this love. You know, and sometimes it comes out in ways that it's like hate, but at the end of the day, if you didn't have them, you couldn't dump that into, and you love that you can hate them, you know, yeah. Whether it's like when people talk about hate watching stuff,
yeah,
or hate listening to whatever, it's like, yeah, but you love that. If you didn't have it, you couldn't process this. So you need it. Like, we need bad reality TV, you know, as much as we need perfect, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, movies. Like, we need that so we can get this stuff out of us, so we can actually love and engage. It's the best part of being human.
I think the world really needs a lot of healing.
Well, I'll say we're going to get there through things like this. The best way to grow is to share your story, is to communicate your perspective and to listen to someone else's. You know, it's why fucking you had, since the dawn of time, people are trying to find ways to communicate stories about their lives, to find ways to empower and educate and give people patience and show them that grief is normal, that pain is normal, that joy is normal.
Dude, grief is normal and hard.
Yeah.
And that's why we don't want to experience it. That's why I don't want to experience it. I don't want to experience like difficult emotions. I need help with that. I'm getting into astrology more, and I have an Aries moon, which means it's really, really helped me, because it's the idea of this framework is that I tend to have really like explosive emotions that move really quickly. And that has helped me like accept my anger. So if I host 3 hours of an open mic and it's a nightmare, I'll call a friend and be like, hey, can I rant for 2 minutes? And they'll be like, yeah. And I'll just be like, these racist, boomer, sexist, fuck, you know what I mean? For 2 minutes straight, and then I feel better. And I didn't know that about myself. Like, it's helping me accept aspects of my internal life that ring very true for me.
Well, props to you for doing it to a person who knows you and loves you.
That's the thing. That's
someone dumping it into the internet into like no context whatsoever. You're like, well,
that's the tool, right? Is that's what makes it a tool, is utilizing it, doing it with like a safe, correct person, and asking them beforehand, hey, like, do you have bandwidth for me to go off for a second? So I'm just not like shotgunning rage into your head, you know? And yeah. And like a lot, you know, I think a lot of people don't have, you know, yeah, the internet is, it's our subconscious in a lot of ways, right? It's like unaddressed rage coming out in anonymous comments everywhere. People have so much anger, you know, but that stuff doesn't help heal it. And over time, I think people, you start to learn like, oh yeah, I'm just staying angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the ways in which I can like express this anger, not deny it, but not also live in it, you know?
I think we're on the right track.
I agree. I think these conversations are like important and beautiful.
Yeah. I think, to be honest too, especially as people who are fans of your guys' work, that they can hear, you know, that's probably the best thing of the internet in a lot of ways, is like, yes, we got unfettered access to a lot of people who chose to participate in it. But also I feel like we got so much empathy from so many of these people, because you got to see how human a lot more.
Oh yeah.
That's, I mean, that cool. I think that's a silver lining of that stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, when you get to hear, they're like, oh, this person feels this way too, or they're like me. They also have this trauma, pain, whatever, joy. Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's great. That's validating. And that's a person I connect with on all these other levels.
Yeah.
And I think that stuff's important. So, I mean, to be honest, your show is really funny. But there's also, I mean, there's other stuff I was listening to. I was like, oh, that stings. That's a good one. You know?
Oh, yeah, like stuff. I mean, right. That's my favorite shit is the stuff that is like, yeah, we got to be real as well. You can't be like, fucking, what if a queef farted or whatever when like, and never talk about the amount of pain that you're in. It would be funny if a queef farted, though.
Yeah, agreed.
Dude, I love you, buddy. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. You're not out in STL, huh?
No, I am. We're going on tour on the 19th, and I'm going to be doing a show with my buddy George McCullough at the Improv Shop, Andy Slowey's The Improv Shop, on April 26th. I'll send you the flyer.
I don't know how much time you'll have, but I'd love to get dinner or lunch or something if you...
Dude, I'm going to have, like, no time unless...
Your folks are out here too, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, my sister's doing a poetry reading at the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis. You could come to that and we can hang out.
Oh, cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're members there.
It's the 25th, Friday. Poetry in 5D, it's called. And then we're on the 26th. You're the best, man. I'm so glad we got to talk and do this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you again for everything.
Where can the people find you on the socials?
I'm on Instagram at The Kirkland. The pod is Blammo Podcast. You can Google it, look it up. There's a bunch of stuff in there. There's some cool folks. Thank you again for letting me be here. Huge, huge honor. I love you both. I admire you both. I love what you all do.
Thanks, buddy. Right. You're awesome, Jeremy.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Rebrand.